Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. Vocalist, songwriter, and actor Leslie Odom Jr. is performing this Wednesday night at the Troy Savings Bank Music Hall in Troy, New York. Was it a second or a season? This past fall, Odom released a new album entitled When a Crooner Dies. The record, his fifth, features 10 original songs that were born from a time of overwhelm, fear, and ultimately growth in his life. In September of last year, Leslie Odom Jr. starred in and co-produced the new Broadway production of the American comedy Pearly Victorious, a non-Confederate romp through the cotton patch by the legendary Ossie Davis. Following its successful run on Broadway, Pearly Victorious will be shown on PBS's Great Performances on Friday, May 24th. The play marked Odom's return to Broadway after departing with several other members of the original cast of Hamilton, an American musical, in July of 2016. For his moving, nuanced, and powerful portrayal of Aaron Burr, Odom won Best Performance by an Actor in a Leading Role in a Musical at the 2016 Tony Awards. He earned a Drama Desk Award for the role off-Broadway at the Public the previous year. He was also catapulted, along with the rest of the cast and creatives of the show, into the public eye, though he'd been working on stage and screen for years. Speaking of screen, film credits include The Exorcist, Believer, Glass Onion, A Knives Out Mystery, and Murder on the Orient Express. He played Sam Cooke in the Amazon original One Night in Miami, directed by Regina King. On television, Leslie Odom Jr. had an arc on the second season of Abbott Elementary. He played Sam on Smash and has appeared on Person of Interest, Law & Order Special Victims Unit, The Good Wife, and other series, and voiced Owen Tillerman on the Apple TV Plus musical animated series Central Park. More on that later. He's also the best-selling author of the picture book I Love You More Than You'll Ever Know, co-authored by his partner Nicolette Robinson with illustrations by Joy Huang Ruiz. Again, Leslie Odom Jr. will be at the Troy Savings Bank Music Hall on Wednesday at 7:30 p.m., and he joins us now. Leslie Odom Jr., I can barely contain my excitement. In fact, I don't know that I'm containing it. Thank you so, so much for joining me on the roundtable today.
Sarah, thanks for making time. I appreciate it.
I get to speak with you today because you're performing at the Troy Savings Bank Music Hall. You're doing a concert. What does the concert slice of your career fulfill for you? What do you like about going on stage? Not just you, but you as you and performing songs.
Right. My favorite thing about it is it's really been over the last 7 years or so that we've been doing it. It's unedited, you know, or I'm the editor, you know. Nobody tells me what to say or what to sing. They're really personal evenings that I put together to speak to the people that I live alongside in our time. I went to see Tony Bennett at Radio City a few years ago, you know, 7 or 8 years ago. And mm-hmm. a few of us sang for him. You know, we did our best to honor him and what he meant to us. And then he sang for us. And it was just the most astonishing thing. You know, when you think about people like Tony Bennett and Nat King Cole, when I first started making this music, we said we wanted to make the kind of music that Nat King Cole might make today. Nat King Cole, Sammy Davis Jr., these people that they were the voices of their time. And there wasn't just one, you know, there was a coterie of them, but they sang the music of their time and spoke to the hearts and minds of the people that they lived alongside. And I guess I'm trying to do that in my own way.
For this tour, will you have a set list that's set for every show, or do you make it depending on how you're feeling that day and what you want to say that day?
Yeah, there's a working order that we have that we know that works. This leads to this and that. You know, we're in rehearsal right now, touching up the material and stuff. So there, when we're done with rehearsal, there will be a working set list. But absolutely, it's available to be changed. And yes, sometimes there are little changes that we make based on the theater, based on the city, because we'll get there. And, you know, I generally like to, you know, eat at whatever's good locally. Mm-hmm. I want to find a good local thrift shop if I can, a little, you know, I like to go find a little, you know, nice leather jacket or something in Troy. But I'm trying to soak up the town. I'm trying to soak up as much as I can about the theater and about the culture as quickly as I can. And I want to make something that is effective, that ultimately moves people. And at the end of the concert, I want people to leave with a smile on their face. So whatever I have to do to get that done, I'm going to do it.
You must be performing some songs in this concert from your most recent album, When a Crooner Dies. And I do want to talk a little bit about that record. But first, what other things do you have in the show that you're willing to tell us about?
I'm a singer. I gravitate toward a repertoire that allows me to sing, and I'm a storyteller too. So I choose material that allows me to tell some part of my story or even somebody else's story. Something that feels personal. Essentially, you know, I want something that is worthy of your attention for 4 minutes, you know, or mm-hmm. 3 minutes, something that's going to, that finishes in a slightly different place than where it began. So because of that, we pull a lot from the American Songbook, from the greatest songs that this country's ever produced. It's that same well that Bennett was pulling from and Sinatra pulled from and Sammy pulled from. They pulled from it for a reason. So there's a great deal of the American Songbook, jazz standards. There's some Broadway, of course, and stuff from the records.
Dark times ahead. Is there life on the other side? Staring down a lonely road. Someone that I need to know. Cause I've been a mess. Hating myself for the fool I've been. Finding my worth in the lies I've lived. Feeling so low, so low in this. If I could just make it till the morning, maybe I could buy some time. If I could make it one more night, I could make it one more night. Said I'd love to believe it. I could be good someday. If I could make it one more night, I could make it one more night.
The songs on When a Crooner Dies are original songs that you wrote. Yeah. What did you draw on as you compiled? What were you feeling? What were you experiencing as you wrote the songs that are on this record? And how did you know when they were ready to be grouped together and put into the world?
Yeah, this is the most personal project I've put out to date. It just, you know, was written out after one of those seasons that's kind of waiting for all of us. You know, it was one of those seasons where at the beginning of it, you know, it felt like life was asking more of me than I had available. You know, my mentor calls it capacity strapped. You know, I really didn't have any more capacity to hold anything else, to do anything else. And so I got into therapy. I started journaling. I went about the process of trying to increase my capacity to deal with this stuff in it. And I over about a 2 year period, I did grow, and I did learn so much. And I never, ever, I have to say, I never thought that I would write about that. It was so personal and ugly and, you know, just rough.
Yeah.
But yeah, there came a time, I think I remember what it was. I was in one of those intense times, and I realized how often I was going back to a certain album of my childhood. And I called my producer and I was like, this is the music we need to make. If I'm not making music that somebody can turn to in a tough season, what the hell am I doing it for? I'm turning to music in this time of need. And so it is my duty. I felt it, you know, it felt like a holy calling. I felt it so strong. It is my duty to write music that people can turn to in one of those times. And so that's what we did. I opened up, I brought my journal to the writer's camp, and I ripped out pages, and I explained what was going on. And what you find, you know, a lot of times with these things, I mean, the reason to do it is to help somebody feel less alone, you know, because that's, we're all in our little corners of the world, and we all feel like we're the only ones going through this particular thing. And one of the most helpful and holy things we can do for our fellow humans, for humanity, is to say, no, me too. I went through something like that, and here, and I got through it. You can get through it too.
It really seems we're not the same age, but we're around the same age. Like our generation is the one doing that. When we hit the wall and we're like, oh my gosh, was everybody before us going through this quietly and alone? Because that feels impossible. I don't know how they managed.
Yeah, that's so right. I think, we have more information. You know, we just have more information than they had, and our kids are going to have more than we have. But yeah, that's the way I look at it. They were going through all of this, but they didn't have the language to talk about it. They didn't have the spaces to say it. So they suffered in silence and did a lot of horrible things as a result of that. But we know better, and so we do better.
I first saw you on Broadway in Leap of Faith in 2012.
Whoa, you saw one of those 23 shows. We did 23 shows.
I know. I wasn't going to bring it up, but since you did, when it was announced that it was closing, I was like, oh, I want to go see it because I want to see Raoul on stage. And I'd never seen him perform live before. So I was like, well, let me get down there. And then, of course, saw you. And I was like, wait a minute. Hold the phone. Let's keep an eye on this guy. And we have, haven't we?
Thank you so much.
Of course.
Burr, we studied and we fought and we killed for the notion of a nation we now get to build. For once in your life, take a stand with pride. I don't understand how you stand to the side.
I'll keep all my hands close to my chest.
Our guest is Leslie Odom Jr. The actor and vocalist is performing at Troy Savings Bank Music Hall this Wednesday, April 17th. Now, we were talking about Hamilton a little bit before we started rolling here, and we were both at the reading at Vassar College, the powerhouse theater presentation of the show. Could you talk? I know you've spoken about it numerous times over the years, but let's bond a little bit over the experience of seeing that reading.
I'm so glad. I've never met somebody else that was at that reading. I'm so happy to talk to somebody else.
Fantastic. Happy to be spoken to.
No, so there were no seats, of course. It was a small little room, probably 100 seats. What do you think, 100?
Yeah, I should know the capacity of the Shiva, but it is a very small black box theater.
Small. And and it was, you know, it was Lin-Manuel and Tommy, of course. And so, you know, everybody knew it was the team that put together In the Heights. They were working on this new show. And so people were coming from the city to see it. And so there were no seats. But because I had been up there a few times, because as we talked about, Nicolette was up there working. So my favorite usher was like, Leslie, I got you. So I scored the very last folding chair in the very last row of that theater. And I saw the Hamilton mixtape. And it is, to me, what I tell people is, it's what falling in love feels like. You know, my favorite quote about art and artists is that an artist spends their entire life trying to get back to the place where their heart was first opened up. And that's what I felt like on that last row, in that folding chair. It was like, it put me back into the seat of myself. It made me feel like that 13-year-old kid again. Oh, this is why I do this. This is what made me fall in love with this forum and this form. It's because of pieces like this. I never thought in a million years that I'd be in the show, but I had such a profound experience in the Shiva. Was it? The Shiva Theater, profound experience in that theater that, you know, I committed right then and there. I was going to be the very first Hamel fan. I was going to bring everybody in my life to see this work when it eventually made it you know, to Broadway and beyond, because I just thought it was so fresh and bold and confident and literate, and it was just brilliant.
I by way of relating, like, totally similar feeling. And I, when I saw it at the Public, I brought my then boyfriend, who's now my husband, but he at that point had been my boyfriend for about 11 months, and he told Lin-Manuel Miranda that I had loved Hamilton longer than I'd loved him, which at that point was true. By a few months, I'd seen Hamilton first, and I was like, get on board for hearing about this while it's growing, because I'm obsessed.
There you go. No, oh my gosh. I love that. And yeah, it's just something that I remember when we first were doing the readings, I was, of course, very, very nervous. There were big producers and big, you know, big people that I wanted to impress, that my ego, right, would have wanted to impress.
Sure.
You know, how do I do this? How do I get over my nerves? And Hamilton at that time, by the time, this is before we bowed to the Public, I was like, you know, it had started to feel like a dear friend. And it was like, how do I introduce a dear friend to a room of new people? So that's how I got over my nerves.
And then, of course, you won a Grammy Award and a Tony Award for that performance. It is well documented. Obviously, it's a historically successful show, Pulitzer Prize winning, and you were an enormous part of that, in that just tremendous role.
No. What else was in the room where it happened? The room where it happened. Someone else is in the room where it happened. Alexander Hamilton.
What did they say to you to get you to sell New York City down the river?
Alexander Hamilton.
Did Washington know about the dinner? Was there presidential pressure to deliver?
Alexander Hamilton.
Or did you know even then it doesn't matter where you put the U.S. Capitol?
Because we'll have the banks. We're in the same spot.
You got more than you gave.
And I wanted what I got.
We are almost out of time, and I will kick myself forever if I don't bring up, there's two things I want to bring up. I'll try to do it really quickly.
Okay.
You returned to Broadway with Pearly Victorious this past fall. What was it about that play that made you want to produce and star and invest your time and get back on the stage with it?
It seemed like it would be harder than what I'd just done, right? You know, I was looking for something more challenging, and by God, was it. And not just because of the size of the role and the technical demands of it, you know, that Mr. Davis had given all Pearly Victoriouses for all time, but also, you know, as a producer, I knew that would be tricky to add to my plate. But working with Jeffrey Richards and my other producing partners, I mean, it was a real dream come true, quite literally.
And we should mention, it's going to show on Great Performances on PBS on May 24th at 9 p.m. So it has another journey in it, that performance where people all over the country can see it. And probably all over the world, because it will stream on PBS as well. The last thing is Central Park, which I love so much. I listen to the songs from it in the car all the time. My niece loves I don't know if you remember every song you did on Central Park, but the Perfect Pizza song, the pizza party song, is so, so good. And we sing it and hop around and list pizza toppings. Did you enjoy doing the animated musical series that has brought me so much joy?
Are you kidding? Yeah, it was created by one of my college buddies, Josh Gad, and I went to Carnegie together. So no, it was so, and Catherine Hahn, you know, I love working with Catherine, and it was, you know, we had great fun making that show, and especially the singing. You know, Josh is obviously well known for Frozen and well known for Book of Mormon. So Josh is a big old musical lover in his heart too. So he wanted to make a musical cartoon, and that's what we did. I'm so glad that you enjoyed it.
We love it. We love it. We rewatch it. I when Danny Burstein showed up to sing that deep voiced fish song, I messaged him and I was like, "Yo, you're on Central Park." It's like, so good.
I gotta find a way to get some of those Central Park songs into these concerts. Okay, that's my next challenge.
That is a great idea.
When I started this journey, I had a single goal. I make a pizza so stunning, but I quickly lost control. Didn't stop me, no.
stop me from making it. Pizza perfect masterpiece. Wouldn't give up, wouldn't shut down. Had to keep on keeping eating this. No catastrophe. So like this piece of pizza, like this piece of pizza. We know love can be imperfect, be perfect. Whoa, oh, oh, oh no. Even if it falls apart or ends up messy, yeah, your love can be imperfect, be perfect. Whoa, oh, 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 oh. Who cares what it looks like, baby? It's more important that it cooks right, baby. So like this type of supper, love can be imperfect, be perfect.
Leslie Odom Jr. is performing at Troy Savings Bank Music Hall in Troy, New York on Wednesday, April 17th at 7:30 p.m. It's been the joy of a lifetime to get to speak with you today. Thank you so much.
Sarah, thank you. Have a great day.
You too. Leslie Odom Jr. will perform at Troy Savings Bank Music Hall on Wednesday, April 17th. His latest record is entitled When a Crooner Dies. Pearly Victorious, a non-Confederate romp through the cotton patch by the legendary Ossie Davis, will be shown on the PBS series Great Performances on May 24th at 9 p.m. Links to more information will be posted along with this interview at WAMC.org. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable.
The party's over. It's time to call it a day. They burst a pretty balloon and taken the moon away. It's time to wind up the masquerade. Just make your mind up. The piper must be paid.